If you're of a certain age, it's probably been a long time since you read an issue of Mad Magazine, and yes, it still exists, and yes, it still takes on the issues of the day. For instance, remember the big deal about Apple's less-than-stellar Maps program? Well, within days of its release, Mad Magazine had its own take on it, a meticulous rendering of the classic View from the World from 9th Avenue, the New Yorker cover. But this was one as if drawn by Apple Maps, so that Las Vegas is between Turkey and Brooklyn, and just before you cross the Mississippi River to Seattle in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Mad Magazine, truly an institution, now 60 years old, and there's a book called Totally Mad, 60 Years of Humor, Satire, Stupidity, and Stupidity. John Ficarra knows all about Mad Magazine. He's here to talk with us about the book. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Let me start off with just kind of going way back in history for Mad Magazine. Back in the early 50s, Mad was not a magazine. I mean, it was a four-color comic book, but it had that attitude right from the start, and there were two names crucial to that period, Bill Gaines and Harvey Kurtzman.
That's correct. Mad started out as a comic book, spoofing other comic books, and the first 23 issues were comic books. And at the same time, this was all put out by Bill Gaines, who was publisher of the legendary EC line. And he was also doing things like Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror and things like that. And along came the Comic Code, and overnight pretty much put Bill's entire line out of business, because everything he was doing, from head decapitations on people being getting axes in the stomach, was no longer allowed in comic books because they thought it would send children down the path to juvenile delinquency.
No.
That's what they said. So lo and behold, the only title left standing from this was Mad. The most subversive title of all, as it turns out. So they immediately switched from a comic book to what Bill called a slick, but was actually a full-size magazine.
Yeah, now it changed into a magazine, big black and white magazine format. But like I said, the attitude there was still the same.
Mad, from the very beginning, was, especially the magazine, more so than the comics was just insanity. They had artists like Will Yelder, and he put in all these background gags, which he called chicken fat. And it was just making fun of, in preposterous ways, of Superman became Super Duper Man, the Lone Ranger became the Lone Stranger, and things like that. But when the magazine really got going, and I guess this traces more to the Feldstein era than the Kurtzman era, it started to adapt a lot of the tenets that we still hold today about don't trust authority, always question it. And also, we started to bring in a lot of the artists and writers that I think the older people associate with Mad, Don Martin, Antonio Porcius' Spy vs. Spy, the Al Jaffe fold-in, all of that started to happen once we became a magazine.
As it started and throughout its period, the magazine seems to have been targeted to the teenage boy of whatever era it's in. But
you are incorrect, sir.
Oh, I am. Okay.
No, actually, we have never targeted the magazine. It just was always written for whatever made us laugh in the office. Now, unfortunately, the average mental age of my typical office worker, I think we'd have to strive to get it up to a teenage boy level. But that is truly the case.
Over the years, this magazine has been seen as this country's, can I use big terms here, like satiric standard bearer.
I think that speaks more to the country and its level than it does to Mad. Yeah, I think that's probably true. And I think Mad certainly has influenced a lot of different mediums that today are very popular. For example, I don't think anybody would argue that The Simpsons wouldn't be around if it wasn't for Mad. In fact, The Simpsons has been wonderful, and they've had Bart visit the Mad offices on one of the episodes. In fact, I think that's another episode, they actually blew up the Mad offices. So maybe they're not too fond of us after all. But even things like advertising, when Mad first started out, the artists that they were using, the Mort Druckers and the Jack Davises, were considered pretty underground artists. And as the first generation of readers grew up, and went into positions of power in advertising and editorial work, like on Time Magazine as an editor, they began to say, boy, I wish I could get Mort Drucker to do a great caricature of Bobby Riggs to put on the cover of Time. Well, guess what? Mort started very young with us, and he was still very vibrant and in the highlight of his career at those times. So they started to hire the Mad artist, and that mainstreamed the look.
Well, certainly with Jack Davis, I mean, here is a guy who was with the old EC comics back in the 50s, and he went on with Mad Magazine when it became an actual magazine. But his artwork, you can see it in zillions of print ads just everywhere throughout the years.
Jack is extraordinarily prolific and extraordinarily fast. In fact, there is a legendary story about Jack that he had to deliver a cover of TV Guide, and he actually did it on the train on the way down to deliver it.
And also, another artist was a guy named Kelly Fries, who was a painter.
Yes.
And it's so weird. Probably his most famous piece of art was actually an old science fiction magazine from back in the 50s, a cover that the band Queen redid for their album News of the World. But, of course, readers of Mad Magazine remember him from all the, dozens, if not hundreds, of portraits that he did of Alfred E. Newman.
Yeah, he did some wonderful covers for us. And one of his most famous pieces for Mad was actually not a front cover, but a back cover. And it was a takeoff on a medical ad at the time, and it was called Presenting the Bill. And that, we still get requests to reprint that piece. I don't know, it's got to be 45 years old now. It's the doctor handing the bill to the patient in the bed, and the patient is going into cardiac arrest. And I believe it's in Totally Mad. I put it in Totally Mad because it's so requested.
And wasn't that done in, like, the style of Norman Rockwell?
Yes. Kelly did some of the Rockwell, although the Mad artist who really concentrated on the Rockwell look was Norman Mingo, who was Mad's first true cover artist and really perfected Alfred E. Newman as you now know him. He made him cuter and gave him a little red hair, and it's basically from Norman's Alfred that all the other Mad artists who have done Alfred over the years have worked.
Okay, who is Alfred E. Newman and the origin of What Me Worry?
The most often asked question I get, I think. Alfred E. Newman, well, let me go back a little bit. Harvey Kurtzman loved this face, and it was of a sort of Alfred, but with black hair, little pointy features, and he gave the face to all the artists to draw him in the background gags throughout the magazine. And he had many names. He was Mel Haney, he was Alfred E. Newman, he was Melvin Kosnowski, and he started showing up more and more. And what happened was, 2 years after Mad started, Ballantine Books put out a paperback compilation called The Mad Reader. And the editor, who I don't know his name, I wish I did, decided to put Alfred on the cover of that book. And he did, and immediately the book went through the roof. And the Mad editor, sitting back in New York, said, gee, maybe we've discovered our mascot. So they put him on the cover and gave him the name Alfred E. Newman, and Norman was the one who first drew him on issue 30. Now, where he came from originally, as best we can trace back, because the minute we started using him, people started challenging us that they own the rights to him. So we wound up having to really research this to establish that Mad owns him. Back in the 1800s, in Topeka, Kansas, and I swear I'm not making this up, there was a dentist called Dr. Romaine, the painless dentist, and he would take billboards on the side of the road, and it had Alfred pointing to the missing tooth, and he would say, "What me worry? I go to Dr. Romaine, the painless dentist. It didn't hurt a bit." So now you have it.
I didn't know we were going to be going back into history of the United States like that. That's amazing.
There you go. And the other thing about Alfred that you should know is he has no profile. Alfred is always depicted on Mad either full frontal or full from the back, but never in a side profile. It just doesn't look like him.
Okay, so that's something he has in common with Charlie Brown in a way.
Yes, absolutely.
There's only certain
Now, the
angles.
Other thing is, we once ran a contest in the magazine as to who the readers thought most looked like Alfred E. Newman. Was it Prince Charles, Ted Koppel, or David Letterman? You want to take a stab at who won?
Ted Koppel, right?
You're right with me. That's exactly, I thought it would be a runaway. But in fact, at the last week of the voting, we got this huge influx of votes from Canada, and Prince Charles took the title. So in a way, Prince Charles lost by winning. We mentioned that years ago in the magazine that we thought that he looked like Prince Charles, and we got a letter on Buckingham Palace stationery. This is when Charles was a young boy, like I guess about 12, 13. And it said, "I bloody well do not look like him, and you should stop saying it." And we asked the palace to comment on it, and they declined, as you might suspect. But the paper was right, and it was postmarked right outside where the palace was in London. So we always thought that it was, in fact, young Charles going off reservation and responding to us, but we never had conclusive proof.
That's amazing. We're talking with John Ficarra about a new book, 60 Years of Humor, Satire, Stupidity, and Stupidity. It's Totally Mad. And I got to tell you, looking through that book just brought back a lot of memories from when I read the magazine. I mean, it was monthly when I was growing up. But I like to ask about, like I mentioned earlier, it seems to be a certain age, and when you grow up, you go away from it. How about a lot of readers, like of my age, we went from Mad Magazine to National Lampoon. And I'm sure that it's happened to a number of people where they just, they read it through high school and suddenly there's a drop-off. Have you noticed that over the years?
That's absolutely true. And that's the hole in our demographic is right in there in that 16 to 20-year-old. Because I think when they get into high school, they start noticing girls, they start worrying about cars, sports, getting into college. And we'll lose them at that period. But I think what happens, and this is only anecdotal, but I've heard it so often, I think it probably fits. They're on their first business trip or they're going on vacation and they're stuck in an airport and they'll be roaming around the newsstand and they'll say, gee, I haven't read Mad and Soul, and they'll pick it up and we sort of get them back. It's sort of like falling off a bike and hitting your head. Once you've done that, you can get back on the bike and hit your head again by reading Mad again. So we get them back. And as I said, the average age is 24. For a Mad reader. So we have younger readers, and I think now we have a show on Cartoon Network who's really doing a terrific job of introducing young readers to Mad in a way that is difficult for us to do just because newsstand distribution is what it is, and even print is what it is. That's been very effective at introducing a very young audience to us that they will now grow into the magazine.
And can we talk, too, about Mad Magazine and politics? Now, again, reading it in my younger years, I didn't notice the politics, but it has been a very political magazine over the years, but it's also stayed neutral in that it parodies every political party that you can figure out.
Yeah, well, we just go after stupidity, and we're never at a loss for material with the American political scene. We don't take sides. A lot of times people think we do, and in fact, a couple of years ago, I did a compilation of all our Bush material. And we called it The Mad War on Bush. And we put it out, I think it was 125 pages. And I got a flood of emails from right-wingers telling me, Mad is politically biased, and this really proves it. And for the fun of it, I went back, and I had one of my editors research how much material we had done over Clinton over the same time period. And it was 123 pages. So we have a real problem. We go in every morning, and we got to make the funny. We have 56 pages of magazine to fill every other month. So we're just looking for stuff going on that we can make fun of. So we don't really have a political agenda at all. It's just that the politicians give us so much to work with. And now with our blog, we have a daily blog. It's even better because we can really respond almost in real time to when they say and do stupid things. We can get it out there right away.
As you're putting together issues for Mad Magazine today, how many writers and artists do you have working on a particular issue?
Claiming working, probably a couple of dozen. Actually working, very, very few. We have artists all over the world, as far away as Australia and France. And thanks to the internet, it's a lot easier to work with these guys than it was years ago when you had to rely on fax machines and FedExes. And I guess I have a stable of writers. I want to say maybe 25, 30 writers, and probably double that in the amount of artists.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I was going to ask this, too, but one of the writers that is represented in the book is Chevy Chase. Now, is that the Chevy Chase?
It is, in fact, the Chevy Chase, who is just starting out. And this predates me, but I've been told this by Nick Meglin, who was the editor then, that he used to come up and visit the office and really wanted to write for the magazine and sent in several pieces. And he did hit on one of them, which was a takeoff on the old Mission Impossible opening scene where this tape will self-destruct in 60 seconds. And Chevy sold that, and then right after that, he went on to Saturday Night Live. So I think the amazing thing out of this story is that his affiliation with Mad did not kill his career right there.
Now, what's the shape of Mad Magazine these days, and is it still cheap?
It's definitely cheap. When you compare it to going to a movie, when you compare it to buying a car, we come up cheapest. So there's no question we're cheap. Actually, the magazine is doing very well these days. Like all print, we went through a very tough time. Fortunately, we're owned by Time Warner, who has some deep pockets and can ride out stuff better than some of the other magazines. Actually, our frequency has been increased, as has our staff. We now have a daily blog, which is great. We also have an app for the iPad where you can go and you subscribe to the print magazine. You get the digital version for free. And the digital version is wonderful because it has an animated cover and two fold-ins that you can actually fold by swiping on the iPad. And we also have several foreign editions. We have a very vibrant book publishing program, of which Totally Mad is part of. But there's actually, we did 11 books this year. So if you go on Amazon, you can find them all. And we also have the Cartoon Network show. And there's talk of a Mad movie. So really, we're firing on a lot of different cylinders at this point, and I don't like to say it too loud because the gods might smite me, but these are very good times for Mad.
And I should mention, I ask, is it still cheap? And that's not my word. That word has been on the front cover of every magazine. It says right there next to the price, cheap, just to make sure you know.
Well, what I always loved, and this predated me, it was in the Meglin and Feldstein era. When they raised the price, they would put cheap and then question mark for that issue every time they had to raise it.
Yeah, and right there on the book, too, on Totally Mad 60 Years of Humor, right there on the inside flap, it says cheap.
No one can milk a gag better than Mad.
You mentioned Time Warner and AOL and stuff. About 15 or so years ago, they were handing out CDs with AOL software, zillions of them.
They were everywhere, I remember. Yeah.
Well, there is one, and I kept it. Of all the ones that I tossed out, I did keep this one. It was with a Mad Magazine promotion.
Oh, yeah.
And it had three songs on the CD, actual audio songs.
I know it well. They did that specially for us, and they put it in our entire print run in a poly bag.
Mm-hmm. And this was great because the one song I'm trying to get to go along with this story when we run on the air, It's a Gas.
It's a Gas.
And I remember that when it came out when I was a kid, you know, it was like a piece of cardboard and it was on those flexi discs and they told you to like maybe tape a quarter onto the surface of it to keep it on your turntable. I remember that song.
One of the things that Time Home Entertainment, which did this book, is talking about is possibly a book of all the different tchotchkes that Mad has produced over the years, like that flexi disc record, the stickers, the mobile, the voodoo doll, all those things that we used to put in the specials. I don't know if you remember them.
Yeah.
You had to assemble them and what have you. So we're not sure we're going to be able to pull it off because a lot of it has been lost over the years and to get it all pulled together. But that is under consideration now. So next year, if I talk to you, it may be about this book.
Also, I'm just thinking, too, that there is actually a Broadway show, a Mad show, years and years ago. And I think I used to have the LP of that on Epic Records. I mean,
you have a terrific memory. I mean, Not only that, but last summer in New York City, there's a group called the Mufti Group, and their entire premise is to restage Broadway gems that have been forgotten. And they remounted the Mad show for a week. It was a very stripped-down version. Mm-hmm. It was fabulous. I can't tell you how much of that show held up. And a lot of famous people of that era got started in that show. Dick Libertini, Linda Lavin was in the show.
Right.
Paul Sands. And this is a real piece of trivia. Guess who wrote one of the songs for that show? Some hack playwright by the name of Stephen Sondheim.
No.
Yes. He did a takeoff on Girl from Ipanema.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. I've been reading this stuff for years. And, you know, all those little quotes they used to do, like in the first page of the table of contents, there's always a quote from Alfred E. Newman.
Yes.
Yeah, those are great. I remember one, let's see, small minds run in the same gutter.
Yeah, we sprinkled them throughout the book. If you look through Totally Mad, you'll see that we sprinkled all the Alfred quotes throughout the entire book. And what you said really makes me happy because you said, oh, we brought back so many memories. Because that was one of my goals when I was editing the book, was to try to get people of your age to remember the magazine and then hopefully, hint, hint, to subscribe and rediscover Mad. Because I think if you look at Mad today, you're going to be surprised by it. It's no longer black and white. It's very current. It's more political than it's ever been. And on any given page, it's either very smart or extremely stupid.
You mentioned all the artists that went on. I mean, I remember all the artists like Bill Elder and Wally Wood, Frank Frazetta, all those people, Jack Davis, who went on to just do incredible stuff like Little Annie Fanny in Playboy all those years.
Unfortunately, the only one still alive of that group you mentioned is Jack.
Yeah.
Who's semi-retired down in Georgia. Yeah, but everybody else is gone. Kelly's gone. Of course, Willie Elder and Harvey Kurtzman are gone. Frazetta's gone.
And then, let's see, Kurtzman went on to do a thing called Help. I remember that.
Yes. He tried a couple other magazines, humor magazines, but they were very short-lived.
Well, thanks a lot for talking with us, John Ficarra. We've been talking about Totally Mad, 60 Years of Humor, Satire, Stupidity, and Stupidity. I love the title. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And for Around Cincinnati, I'm Frank Johnson.